Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Valerie Smaldone. Do you ever feel overwhelmed with too much to do, not enough time? I honestly don't know anybody who doesn't feel this way, I have to tell you. If there were only a few more hours in a day, we say. Well, I'm happy to learn about a book written by Helene Segura, a productivity coach and time management consultant and sought-after speaker. Her new book, The Inefficiency Assassin, Time Management Tactics for Working Smarter, Not Longer, is due out soon. Welcome to America Weekend, Helene.
Thank you so much, Valerie.
I have to tell you, I was very attracted to this topic because I feel that overwhelm all the time. And I make these numerous to-do lists, beginning every morning feeling like I'm behind the eight ball. This is a rather common feeling for a lot of people in business, isn't it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I think one of the most important mindsets to key into is that there is always going to be something left to do if you have a successful career and if you have a full personal life. So one of the first things to grasp is that it's okay that you do have things on your to-do list. You want to have them on your to-do list because it means you're doing well. It's just how can you handle it better?
And not feel guilty at the end of the day when it's not a completely accomplished list.
Right. That's why I think it's very important that you have a list where you have captured all of the different ideas and tasks that you would like to complete. But then separate from that, you pull out the top three tasks that you need to complete the following day, and then also schedule those tasks on your calendar. Because one of the issues we run into and was what causes us so much overwhelm is that we have this ridiculously long list and it's not humanly possible to get all those done in the day. And so when we don't do it, then we bring ourselves down and it's very deflating. So that's why you just want to choose your top three that you know you must get done.
You must see my to-do list then when you say that, because they are ridiculously long. And I, especially on a weekend, think, oh, sure, I'll do this all this weekend. And invariably at the end of every Sunday, very few have been accomplished. So I feel that terrible feeling that you identify in not having enough time. There's that always feeling that you're running out of time, which is just a lousy way to live.
Absolutely. And that's why the key is to estimate how long each one of those tasks will take, so that way you can build that realistic task list. And also to make sure that one of the items on your task list is break time or fun time. Because if you just work, go all day long, in the end you're not as productive because you're just plain tuckered out, especially on the weekend when you're supposed to have some time off.
That's a good point. And what I'm interested to know, Helene, is you handle your clients a little bit differently from other time management consultants because you realize that people have different learning styles, so you tailor how you work with them accordingly.
Exactly. So we try to figure out as soon as possible whether the client is left brain or right brain. And I realize that's becoming an antiquated description as neuroscientists say, well, there's no such thing. But people do have those analytical tendencies versus the artistic tendencies. And then also whether they're a visual learner or an auditory learner or kinesthetic. So by understanding how a person operates best and how they learn best, then we can figure out what productivity tactics to apply so that way they can be successful. Because if you try something that doesn't fit your personality and work style, then you're just going to fall flat and then you wind up down in the dumps because once again, you aren't successful.
Mm-hmm. And that overwhelmed feeling creeps right back in again. You address a circumstance when you have a carefully planned day and then a wrench is thrown in, like your pet gets sick or your child needs to be picked up from school or you sprain your ankle, something like that, right? So how do you handle these occurrences that we can't plan for?
Right. The first thing you want to go back to is those three tasks that I talked about. You know what your top three are, and it's not going to take all day to do them. So in the background, you know what your focus is for the day. So that way, when something is thrown your way, and sometimes it's a terrible emergency, but it can also be the opposite. You might have this great opportunity land in your lap, and you need to take the time to address it. So whatever emotions are running through you, anger, anxiety, fear, or happiness, if it's something good, make sure that you allow yourself to address that and acknowledge that and then move forward with, okay, what's the first thing I need to do to address this emergency or this great opportunity? And then once you realize what your next steps are, go back and see if you need to contact anybody else whose appointment might need to get pushed or whose project might need to get pushed. So that way you're not dealing with the guilt of not completing those things. Those are removed from your plate so you can focus on what that emergency is in front of you.
Do you find that a lot of your clients have the inability to be fluid or flexible?
I think we eventually pinpoint that they have a fear of being flexible. A lot of my clients are what I consider nurturers. That means they are completely loving people, but their gift and their curse is that they put everybody else first before themselves, even their own health. And so part of it is getting them to acknowledge that they can be flexible when they start paying attention to their needs and their priorities and what they need to get done, because once they're taken care of, they can serve everybody else so much better.
It's that old adage of you put the mask on first in the airplane should the oxygen go out, and then you put it on the child or the person next to you.
Exactly. We each one of us need to wear our own oxygen mask. Otherwise, we are useless to those around us.
So Helene Segura, who is the author of The Inefficiency Assassin, great title for a book, you deal with hundreds of clients. And can you share one story of turning someone's productivity around that really stands out for you?
One of the stories that pops out, I need to give a disclaimer for, because it has to do with a client getting off meds. She was on quite a few medications, including anti-anxiety and anti-depression, and a lot of her emotions stem from the fact that she was not managing her time well. So it leads to the overwhelm that we've been talking about. So in working with her psychiatrist, we were able to plan out her time management. And as she began to feel better, her psychiatrist removed her from one of her meds. And she felt even better not being on that medication. Number one, knowing she no longer needed it. And number two, it had some side effects that was, you know, that they were affecting her in other ways. So that is one of the stories that I'm most proud of for that particular client. But for everybody in the end, the pride is just in seeing them be able to breathe at the end of the day and in seeing them have this fulfilling life outside of work, because work no longer takes over.
I'm curious to know your opinion about too much stuff or clutter when you're working, what your desk looks like. And I'd love to know what your desk looks like.
I would say that, honestly, my desk would never be in a magazine picture because it is not empty. Whenever you look at a magazine, we tend to say, oh my gosh, that's the desk that I want to have because there's nothing on it. Well, if you work, you're going to have stuff on it. So I do have a file sorter with action papers on there, and then I have another part of the desk where I have my calendar open so I can always see what I'm supposed to be working on or the next appointment that I go to. As far as items on the desk, I think it's unrealistic to have a completely blank, empty workspace. However, you don't want so many items on there that they become a subconscious reminder of what you still haven't done yet, or a distractor because you have all sorts of games and knickknacks all over the place. So, like with anything else, just like with eating, you do it in moderation. The same thing with your desk area. You have items out in moderation. Just have the items out that you need to work on for that time period, or just enough reminders or inspirational quotes to get you through the day, and not so many plastered all over the place.
not all those post-it notes around your monitor then, huh?
Right. Not all 1,000. Perhaps you can take that down to 25 or so.
How did you get involved with this field? It's an interesting story, I'm sure.
I actually began as a teacher. I was a teacher for 11 years at a Title I school, and organization and productivity are not tested on any state exams, so of course they're not taught in the classroom. And what I discovered with my ninth graders is that their grades were sliding because they weren't organized and they didn't understand time management. So the first week of school, instead of having them write these terrible, what did you do over the summer essays, I started with time management lessons. And that eventually branched out to my colleagues. And then I started my own business in 2004, and I've just taken it from there. So I'm able to use the ed psych background, and then I added in neuroscience because I became fascinated with how the brain works. And then I teach that to my clients, so that way they can function better.
So you're very good at teaching and assessing, obviously, and all mm-hmm. of this curiosity that you have has helped you a great deal. In the last moments, very quickly, one thing mm-hmm. we could do today to improve our productivity.
This afternoon, at the end of the day, choose the top three highest priority tasks you need to complete tomorrow and schedule those on your calendar. That way you've created the time to make it happen and you know what your focus is for the day.
I'm on it, Helene. Thank you so much.
All right.
Time management consultant and speaker Helene Segura, new book, The Inefficiency Assassin, Time Management Tactics for Working Smarter, Not Longer.
Thanks, Valerie.
I'm Valerie Smaldone, and this is America Weekend on the Envision Radio Network.
America.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. How about an easy way to cut costs at the grocery store and keep dollars in your wallet? All it takes is a shopping list with a twist. Here's the consumer science of it.
You better shop around.
All consumer scientists know you'll spend less if you shop with a list of items, but there's a way to save even more. Now, take your grocery list and draw a line down the middle of the page. At the top of the left side column, write must have. On the right hand side, write not essential. Now, shop the list and purchase only the must-haves. Shopping this strategy gives you permission to walk past the things you merely want or don't need.
I'll make you a deal.
What's the cheap psychological trick? By separating essentials from the don't really need, you survive with more cash, better able to shop again. If this trick works for you, contact me at drbuff.com.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit happylandaudio.com. That's happylandaudio.com.
Order in the court.
This is attorney Jay Coleman with the final verdict. Diane is distressed because her 10-year marriage is falling apart. She's asked her husband to move out, but he won't go. She decided that she just can't take it anymore, so she moved out. Did Diane make a mistake? In a divorce, does it really make any difference who moves out first? The final verdict after this.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit happylandaudio.com. That's happylandaudio.com.
Moving out first does make a difference because it can affect how much support Diane receives since she's proven she can live on her own. Also, now her husband could claim abandonment. Diane should have at least filed a separation agreement before she moved out. And that's the final verdict.